Welcome to another episode of Journey to Midwifery, everyone. This week I have on Angela Lugiano. She's a retired CNM that spent her career in North Carolina. She offers many words of wisdom in this episode and lots of advice for aspiring and new midwives. So check it out. Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This is a podcast for and about midwives. This is the place where midwives come to share their stories. I am your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself. I felt called to this journey of sharing the stories of midwives around the globe, and I hope that you will find as much joy listening as I do interviewing. Remember the quote, "Life is about the journey, not the destination." All right. Well, hello, Angela. Thank you for coming on the Journey to Midwifery podcast. Give us an introduction. Tell me who you are.
Oh, thank you. This is Angela Lugiano here. I'm a certified nurse midwife, about 35 years of birthing experience. And I have my story to share.
Yeah. Thank you, Angela, for doing this. That's a long, many years of wise experience to offer, I'm sure. Oh, and you're retired. I did forgot to mention that, right? Yes. That's fun. That's exciting.
I learned a lot from others all along the way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And now enjoying your post midwifery life.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sleeping at night.
I know. Woo. All right. So go back to the beginning, all those years ago, and share why you decided to become a midwife.
Okay. The journey began in 1980 when I was 21. I was working at a health food store, stocking the shelves, and it was a cliche moment. I came across the 1970s countercultural feminist birthing reads. You know, they were all stacked up in a row. Spiritual Midwifery, Immaculate Deception, LeBoy's Birth Without Violence, Raven Lang's Birth Book, which is Midwives and Nurses, and Our Bodies, Ourselves. I was curious and I was inquisitive and I took them all home and read them and brought them back. My soon-to-be husband at the time and I were renovating an old house when we met our neighbor, Betsy. Betsy was a Rutgers University sociology professor. She had a big organic garden, a big belly, and was planning a home birth. And she was going to be breastfeeding baby Ella. It was her first child. And I was interested in every bit of my neighbor's serendipitous timing. I had inhaled all the books and asked to meet up with Betsy's midwives. Alice and Janet, they were two labor and delivery nurses with 25 years experience each. They birthed babies at home. After much cajoling on my part, definitely not theirs, they took me on as a very green apprentice for the next 2 years. And we attended about five births a month. And since I had no experience other than being a baby lover, they required me to have EMT training and teach emergency childbirth to EMTs, paramedics, firefighters, and police officers. That was fun. They were always heading for the door. And I always said, no, there's more. There's more. Sit back down. Listen, there's more. We had a weekly study group with a British trained midwife, and we worked through Miles Midwifery, Oxhorn and Foote, and Williams Obstetrics. Also went to workshops at the farm in Tennessee with Ida May. At that time in New Jersey, home birth was practicing medicine without a license for empirically trained midwives. The only legal providers were CNMs and MDs. For the next couple of years, I gave prenatal, postpartum, and newborn care, attending home births with a partner, Leica. She was trained by Sherry Daniels at the Maternity Center in El Paso, Texas. We birth babies as a team, one for the mom, one for the baby, in every type of living arrangement. Houses, backyard gardens, teepees, motorhomes, cabins, ashrams, religious and intentional communities. Even had a few families deliver at my home due to their situation or distance from the hospital. We had a couple of supportive OBs and peds backup for prenatal referrals, and interpartum, postpartum, or newborn transfers. the docs would meet with the women during their pregnancy, testing, labs, ultrasound, with us present to establish our relationships. In a transfer, we would consult, give verbal report over the phone if that was possible, wasn't always, send records with mom and the baby, and accompany as a doula or a friend. In an emergency, mom and baby safety were more important than my legal status, so I went along in the ambulance, was the chance I took as an illegal provider. We had one family practice MD and a CNM that we occasionally attended home births with as well. We had peds for well newborn home and office visits, usually within 24, 48 hours. And I'd also worked as a birth assistant for two out of hospital birth centers, Family Born and with Loving Care. This was all in New Jersey, and served as a doula for the moms who risked out of home birth care prenatally and birthed in the hospital. This was when answering machines were dodgy at best, and initially even before pagers with lousy service. Although it was a huge improvement, the service was lousy, but it was better than not having it. This was way before cell phones and the dark ages of communication. Being on call for 24/7 for 7 years was a struggle. So by then, my sons Jeremy and Jordan had been born in 82 and 86, and I was fortunate to experience that peaceful tranquility of home birth from the mother's perspective, which is very different than the midwife's perspective. Our midwives, their watchful eye, it felt like this trusted cloak that surrounded us like a protective nirvana. It was really inspiring to birth my babies and know that the safety and guidance belonged to my midwives. They kept me or us informed so we could make the best shared decisions. And a week before my son Jordan was born, I attended a water birth conference and hung from Michelle O'Donnell's neck as an example of a hanging squat. And he signed his book, but I should have asked him to sign my belly, but who knew in those days? Didn't even take a picture.
Didn't usually have your phone on you when you were, or a camera on you back then, right?
Not in 1986.
Yeah.
Very unlikely.
No. I do wonder, it sounds like to me home birth was pretty, like, everything's kind of the same as it was then as now as far as care. Do you think the volume is about the same, more or less?
I think it really depends on where you're living.
Yeah.
And what the access is. And certainly with COVID, the demand for home birth has gone up in almost all areas.
For sure.
New Jersey is it has a very dense population. You know, it's a different situation. There are some rural areas in New Jersey, but mostly it's more urban and suburban with lots of hospitals to choose from as well that are very close by.
Yeah.
No one is going to be 2 or 3 hours from a hospital.
True.
So it's a different situation.
Yeah. So if you're choosing it, you're knowing you're closer to help if you needed it. Emergency help.
Correct.
In Absolutely. New Jersey. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So you, as a CNM, what made you decide to choose that path?
Right. It was not a specific birth or an epiphanous moment, but it was more like a multifaceted awareness. It was overall. So after home births, maybe 100, 125 or so, I came to the personal conclusion that devotion and dedication were not enough, or they were not enough for me. And balancing my own investment of work, time, and money with the comprehensive care I could give to others after formalized education, the CNM path, it wasn't a nebulous decision. It was how I wanted to move forward. There were many reasons why I chose the CNM path, and I'll share them. I was grateful to have learned so much so serenely as an empirically trained midwife, but there were far too many educational experience gaps left open. With an intended low-risk population and no unnecessary meddling, most births do go beautifully. But how competent and proficient was I if I rarely saw complications for mother and baby, or even the wide range of normal variations? it wasn't sufficient for me to read about it, then be responsible for it. And home birth wasn't the safe place to learn those essential life-saving skills, quite possibly at the expense of a mom and a baby. I needed prevention, assessment, differential diagnosis, management, and when to wait and watch. Bleah. Go back to management. Okay. Or I could start with, I needed prevention assessment.
Wherever you want.
Okay. I needed prevention, assessment, differential diagnosis, and management, and knowing when to wait watchfully to be at the tips of my fingers. Being trained by experts, I could pass that knowledge correctly down for the next generation. I wanted to be able to easily consult at all hours and learn from my fellow professionals, CNMs, OBGYNs, MFM, NICU, peds, anesthesia, specialty, MDs. All birth settings require competence and proper judgment. Home births having limited resources and with transfer time being of the essence, prior high-risk clinical experience is vital. Low risk can turn into high risk quickly. And from my perspective, that's not fear. That's accepting our responsibility as midwives. Trust in Allah, but tether your camel. Midwifery being well integrated into the medical system makes birth in all locations, including homes and birth centers, safely possible. I wanted to be a part of that integrated system, so home birth transfers or birth center transfers could be accomplished by communicating information ahead of arrival, and I could be at the bedside with the option of admitting privileges. Abandonment due to illegal status makes emergency transfers unsafe and typically doesn't bode well with the provider on call who's now responsible. Best provider care for mom and baby means honest transparency and a coordinated network. Community care, not fragmented care. You know, and I wanted to provide compassionate, holistic resources for out-of-hospital birthers, everyone. The lack of diversity was disheartening in the home birth population we were serving as empirically trained midwives, myself included. Our client base was privileged, mostly white, usually college educated, and financially able to afford cash for the midwives, often paying for their health insurance, having a new baby, and being off from work as well. Or if they didn't have financial means themselves, they had access to that support during their pregnancies. Women of color, low income, immigrants, and underserved populations may have desired a home birth and all been good candidates, but there was a huge disparity and rare equality. Midwifery care should not be a luxury. From a humanitarian perspective, that lack of access still has not changed much. And the traditional midwife can only offer so much pro bono and sliding scale birth care and still put gas in her Volvo to attend the next birth. I wanted to give midwifery care to every woman, not just the low risk. Women's healthcare doesn't fit in all into one box. It changes and may need a coordinated safety net. My goals were to provide services covered by insurance, Medicaid, Medicare, self-pay, and no pay for continuum of care. And this was throughout the lifespan, not just the childbearing season. The social justice aspect of midwifery is so valuable for healthcare, egalitarianism, and reducing disparities. By supporting multicultural and indigenous ethnicities with varied economic backgrounds. And I wanted to be a part of increasing access to equitable care for marginalized, discriminated, vulnerable populations, those who couldn't pay for medical services and those that were on public assistance. To be able to advocate for girls and women's opportunities, speaking up for those who couldn't speak up for themselves. I also wanted to be responsible for preventing GYN and childbearing trauma through compassionate care, which helps women know consciously and unconsciously that being unconditionally respected feels right intuitively, and they will pass that on. Love all, serve all, midwife's motto. I wanted to share the power of midwifery care and impact society with each amazing birth story the parents tell. Those parents that have not sought out midwifery care may know little about us until they come into the hospital. midwife is on call, and they had a great birth experience. That positive culture ripple spreads. I wanted to be an example to the unnecessarily interventionalist medical system, to teach students of different disciplines the art of listening to women and trusting birth with the access to necessary technology available. Educating colleagues, being a community resource for shadowing and speaking at high schools as well, colleges and groups about midwifery as a healthcare option and as a career, it was all motivating. And as a CNM, I would have sustainable employment personally with flexibility, internationally recognized credentials, and be a part of the ACNM. I could make an accountable contribution to evidence-based statistics, demonstrate cost-effective care, and promote further research. I also wanted to have long-term opportunities with less time constraints without the boundaries of being on call if I chose to. And I wanted to have the option of practicing with avoiding midwifery business survival aspects, such as securing payment. That part wasn't for me.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your very thorough answer. That is a lot of thought put into why you were a CNM. I'm sure we've all thought of those things, but to really just put them down concisely, it was good to hear that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I had to think about that for a bit, but yes.
That's okay. We should all probably think about it, write it down. Kind of like our own mission statement, right?
Right. Sometimes we live it, but you don't technically organize every bit of it. You know why you're motivated, why we do what we do.
Exactly.
But yeah.
And then you can kind of look back at it when you're like having those disheartening moments.
That's right.
So that's everybody's homework. Write it down. if you have time, make time. So you talked a little bit about what you did in your training, but prior to starting being a midwife, what did you do?
Okay. My family moved to North Carolina in 1988, and I went to nursing school at 30, only to go to midwifery school. I think you've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
On the first day of nursing school, I met my good friend, Laura, and she regularly and wisely reminded me, stop telling them you don't want to be a nurse. You just want to be a midwife. Stop.
She was probably right.
She was right. Yeah. So while in the ADN program, I worked as a birth assistant, a CNA for Maureen Darcy. She's a CNM, a true luminary and fierce advocate for midwifery care at the First North Carolina Hospital Affiliated Birth Center, the Chatham Family Birth Center in Siler City. And I needed that positive birth fix personally to get through nursing school. Keep your eye on the prize. After becoming an RN, I worked on labor and delivery at a level 2 community hospital for 10 years while getting a BSN and my CNM and having one more baby boy, Hayden. I was having another home birth, and I was actually hoping I wouldn't go into labor while I was at work. It's been 20 years now since I was an RN. It was pre-epidural time, IV pain meds only, and sympathetic creative labor support were the strategies. We had no in-house OBs, CNMs, PEDS, or even an OR crew after Monday to Friday, 5 p.m. on call only. That was a typical paradigm then. Hence, lots of missed deliveries and handling of complications by the nurses. Incredible learning experiences, both iatrogenic and spontaneous. Even though I would not have thought I'd work as a nurse for 10 years, it was an excellent double-edged learning sword. I was very fortunate to have out-of-hospital birth experiences critically imprinted first, and that wisdom never wavered. Over the years, home births and birth center births, like my sister Gina's and friends' babies, they were bon juju for me.
Yeah, I'm sure all that home birth experience helped you so much, having to be so active at the bedside in the hospital.
Right. Yeah. It really did.
For sure.
It made a huge difference, and it makes a difference in your psyche if it's imprinted.
Exactly.
Like the ducklings that follow their mother.
Yeah, or that is so true.
Have to be their mother.
Yeah, so true.
Uh-huh.
So what school did you attend for midwifery and why did you choose that school?
Team Frontier. You get a lot of that too, don't you?
I do, yeah.
I graduated in 2001. I heard Katie Ernst speak at a conference in the early 90s on the importance of increasing numbers of midwives and educating them with out-of-hospital experience. Many, those that are following midwifery probably know all about Katie, but yes. Kitty's a 1950s FNS midwife. She was a leader in midwifery education, establishing birth centers, and she was the founder of the first distance learning program that began at Frontier in 1990. And when I saw her speak, her enthusiasm, it was dazzling. It was just enchanting. And her dedication was really charming. She just retired at 95 and rest her soul. She just died recently.
She did just die. Yeah.
A few weeks
rest
ago.
In peace.
Right, absolutely. And she served Frontier for 70 years.
Wow.
What a career. My other choice was Eastern Carolina University. It was also a good program, but it was 2 hours away and it didn't become distance until 2003.
You just missed it.
I did. And I wanted to be done by then too. So ECU would have been cost effective tuition wise, but I was working full time and had children in school. So temporarily moving for a 2-year program wasn't a feasible option then. So I chose Frontier. It had stellar recommendations and independent distance learning would work well for me. I could fit in the schoolwork around my family and job responsibilities with limited classroom and travel time. And Frontier also respected and valued my apprenticeship training. And that mattered to me.
Yeah.
It really did. And I had an excellent experience at Frontier and I'm proud to be a part of their legacy. At Frontier now graduates 1/3 of all the nurse midwives in America.
Wow. That's a high number.
It is. And the last time I was there, they have a new campus. And they said a good part of it is attributed to call the midwife.
Oh, I've heard that. That's what your niece actually said.
Yes.
In Scotland.
Yes. So, I mean, it's a fantastic show and it is so accurate.
Yeah.
It is tremendously accurate and very inspiring.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
Because really, the core basics of midwifery really have not changed.
Right. Babies come out the same way, right?
That's right. Right. The details may have changed here and there, but for the most part, yes. And being that I'm a Frontier graduate, I'd like to say a few words about Mary Brackenridge. She was the founder of Frontier. She modeled the first American nurse midwives on European and Commonwealth practices. And that was pre-NHS by 25 years. And the reduced infant and maternal mortality in rural Appalachia, Kentucky, in the early 1920s. Historically, before FNS, Frontier Nursing Service, there were skilled granny, traditional, and Black midwives for centuries, improving outcomes for poor and rural women, especially in the South when hospitals were not accessible to those families due to racial discrimination, limited financial and transportation resources as well. So sadly, in addition to Mary Breckenridge's hard work and tremendous dedication, she encouraged further prejudice by denouncing Black traditional granny midwives and thus harming their reputation with racist bias, compounding and worsening existing cultural oppression. Frontier as a university has acknowledged Mary Breckenridge's outstanding contributions as the founder and as a pioneer in public health and nurse midwifery education. They've also denounced her discriminatory beliefs and actions that were part of their beginnings. Frontier is moving forward progressively with increasing diversity and becoming a truly inclusive university for the student body, as well as their staff and their faculty. And they're committed to educating a diverse healthcare workforce. They're improving equity outcomes by addressing the nation's diverse population and reducing disproportionate healthcare. So it's a better future for all. It's intentional.
Yeah, I'm glad you talked about that. Thank you.
Learn from the past. Be grateful, but learn from the past.
Right, exactly.
Make it better in the future.
Right.
Yeah.
So I've talked to a lot of Frontier grads, so I have this answer a lot, but at the time you went through, how was it set up with Frontier?
Right. It was full-time for the students, didactic first, then clinical. Maybe different now. I think we went to Hyden 3 or 4 times for intensives. That also may be less frequent now. Frontier students find their own preceptors and sites for clinicals, including home births, birthing centers, and or hospitals, usually in their communities, although some do move. That finding your own site, it can be a plus or a minus for students. My clinicals were the freestanding Carolina Birth Center, the High Point Medical Center, and Scotland Memorial Hospital in Laurinburg. And in Laurinburg, they served a large Native American Lumbee population. My preceptors were very supportive and kind. It was about 1 to 2 hours each way for clinicals, so I would usually stay a day or two at a time, going between the office, the birth center, and the hospital, wherever was busier generally. I personally needed different student learning environments than where I had already worked in the nearby communities. Home birth preceptor experiences were available with Frontier, but I felt that other students needed those sites more than I did.
Yeah, because you had experience.
I did. Yeah. And others were really did not have that experience. So I thought that was only reasonable.
Yeah. So you were busy, mama, and going to school. Did you work especially during the time of your clinicals, and how did you manage that?
Right. Yes, I worked full-time labor and delivery during BSN and CNM school, mostly nights, 3/12s. And I saved up a few weeks of paid vacation time for the last few midwifery school clinical weeks when I was traveling a lot and needed longer periods to stay. So I also worked on labor and delivery for an additional couple of months while taking boards and awaiting the results. Not everyone agrees, but I can't stress how helpful labor and delivery experience is prior to midwifery school, especially with a distance education program. There is so much you will have already learned, and it makes quick work of midwifery school and a much easier transition. I think the responsibility level is much less overwhelming when you already know the normal.
Yeah, that is a heated debate.
Yes. Everyone's entitled to their own. That's right. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think I'm just going to add that your post-work experience too kind of, I think, should be decided on what your pre-midwifery experience was. Take that as you may, but just saying. Or post-midwifery school.
That's right. Yeah. No. I totally agree with that. It needs to be well-rounded.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
So age, I think you may have mentioned this, but how old were you when you started midwifery school? How old were your kids? How did you manage mom life and working as a midwife?
Right. I was 40 when I started midwifery school. My three sons were 17, 13, and 5. When I began nursing school at 30, my then youngest was in kindergarten and my third was born before the BSN. So with midwifery school, my then youngest again was in kindergarten, and I maximized time with kids at home because I really felt that you never get it back with your own.
Yeah.
And I remember our CNM instructors telling us that while we were in school, we would miss out on family time due to our studies. And I did not agree.
You were like, No.
I got schoolwork done when the kids were in school, after they were in bed, or on a quiet shift at work when the baby's allowed, which is, it's hit or miss.
Yeah.
But there are times when things were slow and you could get work done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good. And how'd you pay for school at the time?
I had an early childhood degree prior, so I had less classes and prerequisites to take once I began nursing school. RN at a community college, very low cost. BSN at North Carolina Central University. The hospital where I was working had tuition reimbursement for the employees. The CNM school was student loans, paid them off when I sold my house 15 years later. And I just told myself student loans were an investment in the future.
Yeah. I agree. And I think if you spend your money right, that's a true answer.
Yes.
Spend your student loan money right.
Correct.
Like, don't buy a car.
Right. No, that's a
good an expensive car.
Right. Yep. One thing that really surprised me when I was in midwifery school is that many of the, it can be an overwhelming situation, especially if you're a mother, if you have children, that many of the students brought about a lot of change in their lives, either because they wanted to or they had to. Like, many got married and had babies and moved, you know, further distances, but they were also younger than I was as well. So that is the time in your life. It's like having a baby or two when you're in medical school. Well, how old are you? That could just be the best time to have a baby. So it's very individual as to how much change you bring on yourself.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I've met all different ones.
Yeah.
Have babies, get married, get unmarried, all the things.
Right. I forgot that one.
Yeah. Lots of change. So remembering back, after you graduated, how long until you passed boards?
Right. In the early 2000s, boards were twice a year. I graduated in May and took my final comprehensive test on September 11th, 2001, morning of 9/11.
That is very memorable.
It is. It hasn't been a harbinger, though. I had to rush through the proctored exam because I was in a public building, a health department that was evacuated.
Oh, wow. That's scary.
I was getting close to being done, so I just dashed it out. Boards were October 2001 at Frontier in Hyden.
Okay. Did you pass first time?
Yes, I did.
All right. Do you remember what you used to study then?
Mostly my notes, lots of erasable pens and highlighters, and I think a test review book. I'm fairly certain you had one of those as well. I think there's many, many different ways to study and prepare now.
Yeah. And how long at that time did it take to get your state license?
In those snail days, it was about 6 to 8 weeks till my midwifery license came in the mail, but my nursing license took 12 weeks to arrive.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So it improved.
It definitely. And now I get nursing boards the next day.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I was able to like call and find out back when I graduated with my BSN. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I, like my classmates, we ran out to the mailbox every day.
Yeah.
It was either a big envelope or a little one.
That's agonizing.
It was. Oh, it was.
I'm glad it's better.
Well, oh, definitely. That's right. You're done. You're done.
Yes, exactly. Yep. How long after graduation until you had a job? And at that time, how did you search for that job?
Right. I was hired for my first midwifery job while I was still in school, nursing school even, by Maureen Darcy. She's the midwife that I referenced earlier at the Women's Birth and Wellness Center. It was a nonprofit freestanding birth center in Chapel Hill. And I had worked for Maureen prior at the Chatham Hospital Birth Center while I was still in nursing school. So that was how I got my first job. Word of mouth, she asked me. She was my neighbor as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know you're not practicing, but can you share what your kind of like schedule looked like, how you shared call with your physicians or your midwife colleagues and things like that over your time in your career?
Sure. For 14 plus years, 2002 to 2016, I worked in a well-established multi-specialty private clinic. It was full scope midwifery in Burlington, North Carolina. We had 2 to 3 midwives, 2 to 3 OBGYNs. There was one midwife a few years before myself. So that was less nascent growing pains and communication was already in place. The practice provided care at a level 2 trauma center hospital with our office in a connected building, but it was a separate business. This was the same hospital where I worked as an RN for 10 years while in school. In choosing where to work as an RN and a CNM, I would only consider positions that cared for all populations, as in public. Although our OB providers lacked diversity on every level in the office, our patient population did not. That was a battle and a struggle for me until the provider mix improved years later, just as I retired. The hospital had a diverse nursing staff and served a diverse demographic as well, including privately insured, Medicaid, Medicare, multiple public health departments, a growing documented and undocumented Latinx population, and unassigned patients. The hospital had, at that time, about 175, 200 births per month, with our practice delivering about a half of those babies, 15 to 20 babies each provider per month, averaging. The office schedule was six 24-hour on-call shifts per month, including one 24-hour, meaning 72-hour call shift weekend with three weekends off, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Every fourth weekend.
Correct. You're
on. Okay, gotcha.
It sounds confusing, but when you look at it on paper,
yeah, really not. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yes. Verbally, it does sound a little confusing. Overlapping 4 8-hour office and on-call time shifts as well. So when you were on call, you were in the office.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the office, we saw 15, 20 patients per day on a non-call day and about 8 to 10 patients per call day. We also first assisted, scheduled, and our own labor patient C-sections and cared for the mother-baby postpartum unit. Of course, if we were busy on labor delivery, they would cancel the patients or reschedule them to other providers, would make it work for each other. The midwives were responsible for an average of 64 hours per week, combined office and call time. The MDs, they had their own primary call shifts, plus backup on our own shifts. It was a demanding schedule, and taking time off if you were sick or even vacation was frequently frowned upon for the providers. I don't think that's unusual. All providers were held to the same standards. The clinic covered our malpractice insurance, tail coverage, RN, CNM, DEA, professional licenses, cell phone, partial reimbursement, vacation, PTO, CEU allowance, organization fees, ACNM, MANA, and offered healthcare 401k match. I think that's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. Due to the L&D proximity, providers could run back and forth from the office as necessary. Busy schedules most of the time. It was a mutually beneficial arrangement. It was a respecting and trusting milieu between the midwives and our physician colleagues, the OBs, peds, anesthesia, MFM, nursing staff, with our differing models of practice. The midwives autonomously cared for every patient who presented to L&D, only calling the backup for consultation or collaborative care if the need arose. Was very rare transfer to MD-only care, maybe once or twice a year. It was very unlikely. The midwife co-managing at times as well. The midwife provided care admission until discharge. Many patients requested the midwife, but were not specific midwife or MD patients only shared. The high-risk office patients frequently said how they loved to see the midwives because of the way we made them feel like a woman having a baby, not just their illness or their pathology.
That's nice.
Yeah. Can't argue with a successful complementary team. We needed the docs for their high-risk expertise, their excellent surgical skills, and we made the OBGYN coworkers look good in many areas, especially when you combined our statistics per practice.
Yeah.
The hospital birth rate for all providers was about 33-35%. One of my biggest goals in improving women's health was preventing unnecessary primary C-sections. My primary rate was about 8% with the same patient population, plus a high VBAC rate. Of course, we're all grateful for those necessary C-sections. And then mom can VBAC if she chooses. I worked for years with a Scottish OB who would say, "We're making obstetric cripples out of healthy women with unnecessary C-sections." Not that women aren't strong and don't have successful VBACs, but why should they have to face an unnecessary hurdle?
Motherhood
is hard work any way you deliver. And we, as midwives, we have a myriad of savvy tricks to conjure up. Do what it takes to get that primate delivered safely and vaginally. Then she can have a choice in her subsequent birthing location for birth centers or home births if she desires. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I say something about the physician supervision in North Carolina?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So it's on a side note, but North Carolina is one of only three states that still requires physician supervision agreement for advanced practice nurses to practice in any setting. That requirement makes it much more difficult for CNMs to open home birth practices and birth centers in North Carolina. The goal, of course, is to modernize the Nurse Practice Act. It was from 1983, almost 40 years old, to be independent providers with full practice authority. So working on that.
Good. Well, they can follow suit from their neighbor, Virginia, because they just had a big legislative hurdle overcome last year.
Right, right. They were a fourth state, I believe, and now there's only three.
Yep, yeah. So hopefully it'll come soon for North Carolina.
I hope so. Best for us.
Yes. So you, during your career, if you changed jobs, why did you change?
Right. That's a good question. Very good question, Amber. It is. It's a big question because there are many reasons why people would change jobs that really matter to another midwife. You know, they exactly. say, well, had I heard that before?
Exactly. I think people doubt, like, am I feeling unsettled because I'm, you know, my own thoughts, or is this legitimate? And so hearing why other people left, I think, gives them some helpful guidance and validation.
That's right. And sometimes you feel like, am I the only one that really feels this way?
Right.
And maybe you haven't shared that and think, oh, more people may feel that way as well.
Exactly. You might be afraid to share it.
That's right. That's right. So yes, I did. I changed jobs right around graduation. Midwifery school graduation. Mm. I became a single parent. Midwifery as a career can be kryptonite to a wobbly partnership, just as it can be strengthening to a strong one. And by that time, I had two children at home. My older son was living on his own and in college at that point. And the birth center where I was working, it's a wonderful place to have a baby. It still is. And I adored working there. But the call schedule was not compatible with my family responsibilities in 2002. Nature gives many unpredictable curveballs with birth, and I at least needed a schedule that my family and I could live with. I also knew that unless the birth center or the home birth staff is large, which is unlikely, a hospital-based practice usually offers a less demanding schedule. And there are some areas that have a hospital, the home birth, and birth center practice midwives that all share all of those areas. That's more a Commonwealth culture and not much in the US occasionally, but I didn't personally have that option. So I handed in my resignation to the birth center, and a couple of days later, a physician I'd worked with prior as an L&G nurse asked me to come on board with their practice. And he left a message on my answering machine saying I took good care of his patients as a nurse and I would be an asset to their practice as a midwife. So that same practice had offered to pay for my CNM education if I agreed to work for them for a few years post-graduation. You gotta love that. Mm-hmm. So being independent, I know. Wisdom.
Yeah.
Post Monday morning quarterback, right? Being independent and wanting to keep my options open, I declined them paying for my midwifery school education. And then I ended up working with them for 15 years and paying off my student loan myself.
Wow.
Learn from that.
Yeah.
But who knew? Who knew? But the 2-year break between different roles at the same hospital was important. Mm-hmm. You can't clock out as a nurse one day and turn up as a midwife the next day.
Yeah, that's hard.
It is, absolutely. Even though you get a better parking space.
Yeah.
And we find kindred spirits in every area of our lives, including work. And the retired physician whose office I inherited, he left me the red tent on my desk as a welcome gift. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? I mean, he was the age of my grandfather.
That's so nice.
It was.
Yeah.
It was very unexpected and very, very sweet.
So let me ask, when you turned in your resignation, does that mean you didn't have a job lined up?
I did not have a job.
That's scary.
It was. And here I was a single parent, and I was out in my garden thinking about that, thought, not a whole lot of wisdom I could have. And I didn't have other resources, but I just kind of felt that it just wasn't right at that. It wasn't right at that time for me. It was certainly a better option for other midwives, but it wasn't something that was going to work for me. And there you go.
That was a leap of faith.
It was definitely a leap of faith, because they weren't technically looking for another midwife as well at that practice. I hadn't even seen anyone from that practice in a long time, but they just, there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it worked out. Thank goodness.
Sure did. Sure did.
So how did you manage? I mean, you were a single mom, at least for a little while. How did you manage your work and your life?
Right. Little sleep, mostly. That's another common theme, isn't it? How we do it. In the early home birth and birth center days, I brought my nursing babies along, and the families knew to have an extra pair of hands to help. And as my boys got older, they were very proud, and they were very respectful of my work. It was impressive to me. They just switched gears so quickly. When we had to move fast, they'd say, the youngest one would say, "Hail, baby." Or if we were in the store, they would say, "Oh, here comes one of yours, mom, that baby smiling right at you." And then the parents would come over and give me a hug, but they would know it before I did. So it was, gratefully, we had a very understanding and supportive tribe, family, friends, and including fellow providers and coworkers were very helpful. I was a single parent for almost all of my years of practice, to answer your question there. My family they were very positive and grateful for my career and its benefits. My middle child immensely helped out with the younger one, and shenanigans and escapades did seem to happen when mom was on call.
Right. Always.
Oh yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's amusing now. I mean, they think it's hilarious, but really it wasn't all that funny then.
No.
For me. But yes. Oh yes. And my boys have always made me very proud. They're all kind, successful, resourceful, and independent. And so many kins of midwives are just that. I have noticed that over the years. Plus, they can give breastfeeding advice over the phone.
I was just thinking, like, what a cool thing for three boys to grow up and be, you know, a participant in.
Yeah.
And then go on and have their own, if they choose, have their own families. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think that we as midwives, or even as professional women in any field, we all know the irony of helping other families at the possible expense of our own. But most jobs for any parent in any field that provide for our families can require time away from them. And for the big picture, I could do with less money, but I couldn't do with less family time. And the new job that I was taking, it made the finances and the family both achievable. So it was an easy decision. And living 30 minutes from the hospital, I took call from the hospital. And if there was any downtime, I caught up on perpetual charting at the office. And then I could leave earlier on my office days. It would have been easier to move closer to the hospital and closer into town to take call from there. But the home that we had lived in, it was my youngest. He really wanted to go to the same schools and live in the same house that his brothers had. It was very important to him. And they had all their friends and all of their local, and they had already had some unexpected change. So we made it work with everyone.
Yeah.
So that's how it worked.
So talk to me about salary. What I'm looking for is maybe like what a new graduate might expect in your area. You know, maybe in general, it's hard to say because you were had experience. So I don't know if you can specifically speak on your salary after that much experience, but in general, what would somebody expect in your area for salary?
Sure. I think my starting salary in North Carolina in 2003 was $65,000-$70,000. Mm-hmm. And by retirement, which was 15 years later, it was about $122,000.
Okay.
About $122,000. In North Carolina now, I would say, not really sure, maybe $85,000-$95,000.
Yeah, it's probably about right.
I would think that it's probably average.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A little advice for new grads considering private practice. It's important to carefully discuss the schedule you are hired for initially. And it does that, and that the schedule does not change or morph into more call time or busier office schedules if another provider leaves. Mm-hmm. I mean, that can happen. And I didn't know that being new to this scene, new to a multi-specialty practice as well. Unless it's been agreed upon prior, it should not be assumed that the CNMs will pick up the other provider shifts until replacement occurs. If the practice is down a provider or two or three, and that can happen, the MDs will pick up the extra call shifts unless the midwife chooses to. And if you choose to, then the salary is compensated for the increased workload, right? Even if it's even temporarily,
right?
Because you don't know how long it's going to be generally, you know, till you get new providers in. So even with no changes, no staffing changes, regular raises after productivity and patient satisfaction reviews are essential. Where I worked, we had the option of a base salary with either a raise or a productivity bonus, which it's kind of hard to control productivity with childbirth, one would think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of control office time, but then it may end up giving the patients less care and less time. And right. That was definitely not my aim or my goal.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you're saying that should be like in your contract.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. One of those unwritten rules that should be written or at least discussed. If this happens, then what would happen with this, and what can we anticipate and what can we expect with changes?
Yeah, that is really good advice.
Yeah.
That one might not think of when going into practice.
One might not think of, exactly. And even if a provider doesn't leave, other providers have babies, adopt
right.
children, have elder care. There are many, many different reasons that may pop up also unexpected. Right. Medical exactly. leave for anyone.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great point. So after all these years, has your reasoning, what is your reasoning now for being a midwife? Because it grows and changes and morphs. What would you say now?
Right. I retired 5 years ago at 55. It was in 2016. I was kind of attending a midwifery conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I was hiking at Yellowstone when I met my current partner. We had a long distance relationship and got married a year later. So he's a New Zealander, and a tiny soapbox here. Is that okay?
You met a New Zealander in Wyoming.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. And he was here just hiking and fishing and camping, and he had a 90-day visa, which is typical. Wow. So yeah, there you go. Yeah, who knew?
Yeah.
So tiny soapbox here. New Zealand is a country with midwifery-led maternity care. Midwives are the gold standard in Commonwealth countries because of their intrinsic value in the public health system. And universal health care, it can't function without midwives being the backbone of maternity care. In the healthcare for profit, economically competitive, litigious US system, we see how midwives struggle without that government support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about it in depth, and all systems need improvement, and not saying at all that the NHS is without flaws, they certainly are. Their midwives have very valid and worsening concerns, just different than the concerns we have here. But comparing our different Western cultures with Commonwealth and the US, both have the same expectations, the same childbearing and health expectations, the maternal infant outcomes are starkly different, dramatic. And when traveling in Commonwealth countries, people, you know, they usually ask you about your profession, and I tell them, oh, I'm a midwife. And everyone smiles and they tell their birth story. And it's all about how the trusted midwife, how she looked after them so well. Even in hard times or unexpected challenges, it really highlights the relationship within the community that the midwife has. You know, it's called the midwife. In the US, gratefully, midwifery is becoming more common every day, but it's still a niche. And it can be a battle to even explain and defend our very existence.
Yeah.
And the interview that you had with our lovely niece, Heather, in Scotland, is quite the contrast.
Yeah.
I think I lost the plot here. Sorry. Back to retirement. My husband and I, we wanted to travel for long periods, and that doesn't work with most midwifery schedules. Very few. I mean, there may be some part-time jobs out there, but not for that long a period. And we wanted to be able to spend more time with family and our two new little granddaughters and hike and garden and volunteer in the community. My youngest child had graduated from college that year. So my husband had stopped working years ago. So retirement it was. But I do miss the intimate relationship. It's like no other. Caring for women every year and seeing pictures and hearing about our babies growing up. It's very rewarding. And I also, and I've heard other retired midwives say things like this, I miss having the power wand to give women the freedom to birth their way, you know, and feel accomplished by their own strength. We get to give that to women and keep them safe at the same time. And we know it's not about us, it's about her. And it's to educate women to make healthy changes to enrich their lives and their families' lives, and to also to help them choose birth control options that are right for them so they can get through school, careers, relationships, and at key times in their lives, and to be able to refer to other compassionate providers, including mental health. And I also really miss doing my best to speak Spanish with patients. I don't miss quality time spent with the computer at all. Retirement is lovely, and sleeping at night is not overrated. I mean, it's a very challenging lifestyle. It was an honor and a joy, and it really didn't ever feel like a job to me.
I like that. And now you can trust that your wisdom, and I'm sure you taught and precepted along the way, is passed on for the next generation of midwives to share that wand with birthing families.
That's right. And women's healthcare perspective as well, even if they're not having a baby.
Right. Exactly.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's right.
So on this long career of yours, did you ever feel like quitting? And when you had those feelings, what kept you going?
I think what really kept me going, and probably keeps a lot of other midwives going as well, is that sacred responsibility to protect the moment when the new baby's placed on mom's chest. We know she never gets that magic time back again with that baby.
Yeah.
And it's very motivating. And also a big part of midwifery that I enjoyed was just the intrigue of the continual learning and creatively figuring things out and achieving solutions, that aspect of the profession. I mean, it was the glimmer of those aha moments. And I think you also learn and grow as a person, and you learn to see criticism and conflict as growth and being part of a team.
Right.
Which is really enriching to be part of a team. And the team there, the objectives that the team has, it might or might not be aligned with your own, but you can learn a lot from it. Mm-hmm. Not have considered going down that path. So not in the patient care sense, not problems with differing practice styles, but with office, you know, business plans, decisions, things that you would have thought that's not going to work. And it really does. So any career with as huge an impact as midwifery will have the occasional downsides. along the professional and personal arc. I mean, we have great expectations or we wouldn't be midwives.
Right.
Yeah. It's a flux.
It is.
And we every day, and we decide if the overall benefits balance the challenges and the detractors. It's definitely an up and down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Good answer.
Thank you.
In your time, how did you deal with things like burnout or trauma, like to yourself as the birth worker? How did you deal with that?
That's another good question, Amber. I just assumed the busyness bordered on burnout because it was inherent in the nature of birth. It was a commitment that I learned early on that it's a demanding career. But really the thing that definitely buoyed me and keeps you going is that I felt very supported and appreciated by the women and their families and also by coworkers, absolutely. And that really made it so worthwhile. And even on a stressful day, I could go into the patient's room, close the door, and solace would reign. You know, I was hers and she was mine. Of course, until your pager goes off, your cell phone goes off, and your nurse knocks on the door, and there's three people waiting outside your door to talk to you as you get. But it's a harmony, you know. It's a relationship like no other. It's kind of like breastfeeding. It's hard to explain unless you've been there.
Right.
So today's midwives, they're much more cognizant and mindful of achieving that doable work-life balance, and that is really impressive. They really are. And especially given the seductive nature of our work, it's physically demanding to care for a needy population. And we have an emotional investment.
I really think the newer generation has listened to you all and said, no, we can't do that. We can't burn out again. And our kids grow too fast or whatever in your life is important. Don't want to miss that. And yep. Lose yourself. So you've passed that wisdom on.
Oh, yeah. They're great. They're good teachers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What personal qualities do you feel that you've possessed that has made you successful as a midwife?
Right. There are many different types of sister midwives, massage femmes all over the world, but knowing many with a long career, we all share the same qualities. We've all got chutzpah, all got moxie, ardor. And midwives, we're not shrinking violets. We're a stalwart tribe with purpose. We really are.
For sure. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend as, for midwives to help with being successful, like a tool or a skill?
Mm-hmm. I think learning personally for me, learning to speak Spanish or any other language, it's invaluable in healthcare.
Yeah. As a non-Spanish speaking person, I definitely agree. I wish I had that skill. Do you have a favorite book or resource or something that you recommend to like an aspiring midwife?
Uh-huh. The best resources personally for learning to speak Spanish, of which I need lots and lots of work, absolutely, were the interpreters at the office, the hospital, and the Spanish-speaking patients themselves. They were super kind and very patient with me. Lots of laughs, of course, at my expense. Years ago, I used Polyglot, which is a medical translation. It's a Spanish app, and it was from Duke Global Health Institute. I'm sure there are new versions now. I don't even know if that one's still going, but there are many that you can just look up when you have questions right then.
Yeah. Like Google Translate. I've used that.
Oh, that's, yes. There are many. Yep.
Yeah. Do you speak fluently Spanish?
Oh, no. No. Definitely. I can give birth and breastfeed. Literally.
Yeah. Not much. Just rudimentary.
Oh, yes. And in traveling in countries that were Spanish speaking, like even Costa Rica, for example, I realized I can only say things that are nice.
Oh. Well, not a terrible quality.
No cocktail party, no conversation. And I'm working on that. I'm definitely working on that. I need to branch out more.
Yeah.
But it makes a difference. Even if you have 20 phrases that you use to just to make someone feel better and feel more comfortable. in their native language.
Right. There, yeah. I know there are like Spanish for medical courses, mm-hmm. things like that. So definitely. That's something somebody could look into.
Yes. Yes. I had a cassette tape probably in the 80s that was Spanish for midwives, something like that.
Oh, okay.
It was very, very helpful. It was very basic, but it did help. Yeah, it was good.
They probably can't play that tape, but maybe they have it on.
Right. I'm sure it's all online now. Yeah, it was a long time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything that you're particularly passionate about that you'd like to share?
I'd like to suggest to fellow retired midwives, recruiting and mentoring students through nursing and midwifery school and the first years of practice. Reach out by texting, calls, tutoring if needed, meeting up and hosting camaraderie events with peers at all stages to have that in-person inspiration. And that, of course, has been really difficult with the past couple of COVID years. Very challenging for students. Students may have nursing backgrounds, and some, like myself, did not. And with those who've decided to make the transition from empirical midwifery to nurse midwifery, I understand their experiences and sacrifices, and I can support them knowing both sides. I was personally very fortunate to have an incredible role model, Paragon, Colleen Gutierrez, for 25 years. She's a Georgetown Air Force midwife and a Varney co-author. Sublime skills. She is compassionate, with a humble, selfless heart all at the same time. I used to say when I was in midwifery school, if I had a question, if I asked Colleen, I didn't even have to look it up. I knew that was the right answer. She was the best resource ever. We have, each of us, so much beneficence to offer by midwifing the new midwife. The number of new midwives of every race and ethnicity needs to grow exponentially. Especially the midwives of color. America is the only high resource country in the world with worsening maternal mortality rate. With our guidance and support, we can remove barriers to diversify our own profession. And we can increase inclusivity to reflect the varied demographic of the US. Of the 15,000 midwives in the US, 90% identify as white. 6% Black, 4% Latinx, 1 to 2 Indigenous, Asian, Pacific Islander, and Native American Indian. Black women and their babies have the worst childbearing outcomes of any racial, ethnic cohort. And this disproportion is due to racism. It is not due to race. It correlates with the low numbers of midwives and providers of color in every medical field, not just childbirth. While we cannot make another provider walk faster when a patient of color needs them, we can quicken our own pace and hand that standard of integrity down. It matters what we say and it matters what we teach as well. Mm-hmm. Students hold that dear. They remember those things. And during our careers, student time it's frequently rushed because we're busy. And that focused one-to-one connection with an experienced midwife who's not their instructor or their coworker, it incomparably contributes towards the solidarity and the sustainability of our profession. And they also know it doesn't go any further than our conversation. You know, it's right. Something that's not shared.
Right.
And it's catch the student and make sure they don't fall. They're integrating and balancing and learning so much in a short time. And for them, it seems like an eternity, but we know that it does go by quickly. Mm-hmm. But they don't know that at the time. They just don't.
It feels very long at that time.
It sure does. And the first few years, it's a challenging seesaw. Even day to day can be practicing. And mentoring from retirement also helps the working midwife who's precepting students as well. It takes a midwife to understand the realm of the hard parts and to give advice and the pearls of confidence. And that all adds to their competence. As well, you know, if you mm-hmm. teach something kindly and with patience, they remember that. Of course they do. I mean, you learn through mistakes as well, but they just tell us about the mistakes. It's a little different than experiencing the mistake with them. Mm-hmm. And midwifery, it's an evolving constellation. It takes support to achieve our goals. there are so many moving parts with it. And it's my mission to focus on more midwives for the future. Our grandchildren will all need midwives someday.
Yeah, those are all great points. Thank you for sharing that. I've met a few retired midwives out there that are, doing courses, ultrasound course. Ginger Breed Love has the company where they review people's contracts. So they're out there. They're doing it. Some that retired and have a midwifery mentorship business, things like that. So mm-hmm. I think that probably will grow as well.
Yes. Yes. And mentoring, it's so much fun. I mean, you feel like you're the proud mom in the audience.
Mm-hmm. Really. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're well rested. So you get to mentor with energy.
That's right. And then I get more young women and more girls in my life. My boys are wonderful, but they don't want to be midwives.
I understand. Yeah.
No. But then I get all these great girls and women that do.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
That is fun. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on, sharing your story. You get to go and go on vacation.
Yeah. So,
and I get to air your podcast.
Thank you. And thank you so much for doing this podcast, Amber. I love hearing other midwives tell their story.
Thank you. I get lots of great feedback, so I love it.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this newest episode, and I have many more planned. I have lots of midwives on the wait list that will put me out through the summer, so I'm stacked up with plenty of volunteers. You can keep sending your suggestions my way if you would like, and I will add them to the wait list. I appreciate everybody participating in this podcast, so keep them coming. My email is journeytomidwiferypodcast@gmail.com, and you can find me on Instagram and Facebook, also at Journey to Midwifery Podcast. Until next time.